your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
Good evening. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Fred. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. So is everybody ready? Let's start the meditation. God, there's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who have suffered from alcoholism. I've asked a friend to read Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important you know what one is.
Everybody, my name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. That's Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others or talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane, meeting mode, or just turn them off. So Mike Chase called me and Joe Bear over to put on our microphones, and Mike Chase is like, have fun with it, have a good time, you know, do your best, and this is like, this is your meeting. And Joe Bear's response was, let God be praised. And I believe that's a good reason we're all here tonight, and I'm excited to what he has for tonight.
Thanks, Fred. All right. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic and a member of the Wednesday night Big Book Study Group. My name is Joe Bear. Good to be here and feeling a little bit more comfortable and a little bit more enthusiastic about tonight. I walked in earlier and Pedro said, would somebody get in an altercation? Somebody punch you in the nose? I said, no. I said, actually, what happens is you know, you got to be careful on what you worship, because it'll come back to bite you, especially when we get into this thing, we start talking about God and where we need to have our focus. And, you know, when I was a youngster, I grew up in West Palm Beach, the north from here, right? And it was all about the sun. It was all about worshiping the sun. It was all about getting that tan, looking good, being right, being in control, you know, all that kind of crazy, crazy stuff that, you know, in hindsight is... got consequences, and skin cancer is one of them. So I encourage all you youngsters, there's a lot of them in here, you know, be careful on what you do in the sun, you know, and protect yourself, or you may end up having to get radiation and get that stuff taken care of. So, but it's not going to impede what I do here tonight, because we're talking about a solution that is nothing but hope for the sick and dying of alcoholism and drug addiction, right? So, you know, last week we we began to explore this step one, this powerless feature of alcoholism and what it involves, and maybe talk about some things to where each and every one of you can identify with whether you suffer from them or whether you don't. You know, there may be people in here that are just simply exploring. There may be people in here that have gone to court for a DUI that, you know, they just behaved badly one night or stupidly or whatever, and they got pulled and got arrested and got thrown in jail and went before the judge. The judge says, look, you know, I'm going to let you on probation, and, you know, if you serve out this probation, you don't get in any more trouble. We'll get you off probation. You can live the rest of your life without any kind of, you know, consequence from this ordeal. However, you can't drink and you got to go to some AA meetings. That may be why you're here. I don't know. I know a lot of us get here that way. A lot of us stay as a result of that. A lot of us don't. But here's the thing. Regardless of how you get here, we're glad you're here. You know, if you come in here and you hear some things that you can identify with, perhaps you are one of us. And then again, you may hear some things that you don't identify with, don't make any sense to you at all, and you say, and you perhaps because you're not one of us. But if you are here, why wouldn't you want to at least investigate whether you are suffering from a hopeless condition of mind and body or not? Because there is a solution. It had absolutely no, there was nothing within me that could figure it out. And matter of fact, I tried. I tried for decades to try and figure out how to get over this thing about why I would always end up in the same place, always feeling the same way, always having the same consequences, regardless of how I thought I needed to pursue this thing they call recovery. There's some things that they point out in the doctor's opinion right up front. As a matter of fact, it's so up front, it's before page one. It's in the Roman numerals. And you don't want to miss it because it's very key on coming to a conclusion or coming to some information that will have you either be in agreement or not. We covered it last week. Dr. Silkworth was the guy that treated Bill Wilson. He treated him three times. He treated him at Towns Hospital, which was the only hospital in the one of the very few hospitals in the southeastern region that treated addiction and alcoholism by detox, and that was the treatment. So he would bring us in, he would get us undrunk, he would send us back out and say, good luck. There was no AA, there was no solution for alcoholism at that time, other than locking you up, putting you in an insane asylum, or an asylum, putting you in jail, or sending you back out on the street where you would just probably live a life of a troll in the Bowery, right? I mean, that was just it. So Bill acquired some information through his ordeal, and Ebby Thatcher, which was a guy that had 90 days of sobriety, give or take, that had gotten sober through the Oxford movement by a very specific set of circumstances that were, I believe, divinely put together. You know, he came and had a chat with Bill in his house, and Bill was drinking, and, Bill had told Ebby Bill had issue with this thing that Ebby had presented to him was the reason that he got sober. But the fact was, is Ebby was there, and he was sober. And that was the last person Bill ever thought he would witness and see, especially right across the table from him, sober, undrunk, looking the way he did. Fresh-eyed, fresh-skinned, clear-eyed, you know, upbeat. Completely different than if you were, you know, suffering from the horrifics of alcoholism. So he had proof right there, like 3 feet away, right there. And Ebby said, look, he said, Bill, I found religion. Bill goes, oh. Right then and there, Bill immediately goes into the back of his mind and only can recall what religion was to him, which all of us do. When we come to find out that this is a spiritual approach, there's only one place to draw reference from for our own personal experience. It's the past. Good, bad, or indifferent, it doesn't matter. It is what it is. But we draw conclusions and we draw reasons and justifications and rationalizations from that which we know about religion. Why it did work, why it didn't work, why it wouldn't work, whatever. Why I won't even approach the subject. And that's what Bill did. You know, he went back to his childhood and, you know, imagine, you know, had that recall of his dad, you know, preacher on the hilltop and this and that. And he wasn't having that. He just wasn't having that. So they got into this little bit of an argument, and finally Ebby says, you know, Ebby got frustrated with Bill, right? Bill's dying from alcohol. Like, all of us when we get here, we come to Alcoholics Anonymous because we're dying of alcoholism. To continue on as we have means disaster. We've got evidence. We've got proof of what our lives had going on for them by the time we got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's Bill. He's dying from alcoholism and he's drunk. Of course, it's hard to talk to a drunk, right? Somebody that's drinking. And Ebby says, look, he had enough of it. He said, Bill, he says, why don't you just try your own conception of God? And then and there, immediately, it drew away all the argument from Bill. How do you argue with that? How do you argue with somebody that's not necessarily a non-believer, but didn't believe that in the religion approach that Ebby was bringing to him? He says, look, dude, why don't you try your own conception? I'm sober. I've been sober for 3 months. And Bill thought Ebby drank worse than he did, right? So he pulled away the argument. And all of a sudden, Bill has this epiphany that, you know, God, all it was necessary was for me to be willing to believe that a power greater than myself, regardless of whatever hat that God wears at the time, will maybe provide me what he's providing in my friend, and it helped Bill become open-minded. So when we're talking about the powerless feature of alcoholism, the physical dilemma, the physical sickness, malady, whatever you want to call it, we have to be a little open-minded because it's really kind of presenting the information in a way where we got to ask ourselves some questions, right? A couple of things that I think are profoundly important is one, to know why we drink. You know, you've heard me talk about it last week about this internal condition we come in here with because of the things that we do. Because of the things that we have our families suffer from as a result of our behavior. You know, the abandonment and the incarcerations and the troubling disappearances and surfaces and, you know, just the erratic behavior, the inconsistency of successful living that we exhibit through our whole journey that really creates this collateral damage in our families and our loved ones that, you know, they get so fed up with us, right? They get really fed up with us. It's painful to them. We put them through emotional hell, right? Well, when we do those things, we begin to suffer the symptoms of doing those things, like shame. There's not a one of us that come into Alcoholics Anonymous that don't know the word shame. There's not one of us that don't know the word loneliness. Not one of us that don't know the concept of regret or remorse. Right? There's not one of us that don't know what it feels like if you've been trying this thing over and over, building up trust as we stop drinking and drugging, putting a few days or months or weeks or months together, building their trust up, and then tearing it down because we disappear again. There's none of us that don't feel some sense of being a loser in this deal and having a sense that they're looking at me and judging me as a loser because it validates how I feel inside. A failure. What I've been trying to say over and over and over. I do stop drinking and I do go to meetings and, you know, and then I get drunk again or I get high again or whatever. When we start to harbor those things, the regret and the fear and the shame and the loneliness and the feeling like a loser and feeling like a failure, and certain everybody can see it. The worst part about that, and I say it all the time, is pretending to everybody else that it's not there. That it's not real. How you doing? I'm good. I'm having a fabulous day. And be dying. Be dying inside. There's nothing more crippling or more paralyzing than that. So we start to live this masquerade. Start to live this phony life. That we have one life that we want all the world to see and believe. And we have the other one that's true on the inside. And it's killing us from the inside out. It's rotting us from the inside out. And the only thing that our insides are telling us is that I need relief. I need relief. I need ease. I need comfort. I need relief. I need relief. All those things that we've done can be rectified if we make the proper decision that all this information is leading us to in step three. But most of us don't do that. Most don't. If I don't conquer and address and investigate and treat this internal condition, I will always succumb to the desire again. Silkworth said it. He says this. Men and women drink essentially could be because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while we admit it's causing injury or injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the truth from the false. See, our truth is that it's everybody else and my circumstances that is causing me to drink. When I can't even gain a proper perspective that my drinking is causing the conditions and the external consequences. Right? We have to justify what's going on in our life by blaming and being a victim of, rather than assuming responsibility for it. If I had assumed responsibility for it, I'd have to do something about that. That would be the next step. But if it's out here, the next step is only to drink. It can't be anything else. I have to medicate. Because this is destroying me. Right? So it says, to us, our alcoholic lives seem the only normal one. We're restless, irritable, and discontented. See, they're talking about somebody that's undrunk at this juncture. They're telling us the reason we drink and drug is for ease and comfort. To medicate an internal condition that we're pretending we don't have. Right? They're saying that when we stop drinking, we become restless, irritable, discontent. This internal condition starts to scream from within. Right? We try every known means to get ease and comfort without making the final sacrifice to actually medicate. We'll go to casinos. We'll do sordid things. We'll steal. We'll do whatever we got to do to maybe have a sense that whatever I'm doing will give me ease and comfort. Maybe it's the girl. Maybe it's a guy. Maybe it's, you know, it's that relationship. Maybe it's just somebody needs to take care of me because I'm dying inside. And then whenever we get those things, they don't work. We're trying to fill a God-shaped space with earthly things. It doesn't work. Bill knew this, right? Dr. Silkworth even knew this. He says, they're restless, irritable, and discontent. Think about that. We come into AA, we stop drinking and drugging because we know it's physically killing us. But then our emotions and mental state take over. And literally, we're in a pursuit to destroy ourselves. Restless, irritable, discontent. There's a lot of people in treatment in here right now. Sitting right here right now. No doubt. You're suffering from that condition. We don't tell anybody about it because we don't want to look like we're weak or like there's something wrong with us. We want to be looked at like we're okay. You know what I mean? I don't want you to know the truth. I'll shrivel up and die if everybody knew what I was suffering. But the problem is everybody suffers from it when they first come into AA. And you're not medicating. And it's out of control. Right? Unless, think about this for a minute, they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a drink or a drug Right? It says, after they have succumbed, which means given in to the desire, which we talked about last week, the desire comes first. What's a desire? Ease and comfort. Relief. I'm dying inside. And you're all alone with it because you don't let anybody know. They may not like you. They may judge you. They may try to tell you why you're that way. You know, all this garbage that we go through in our head, right? So we succumb to the desire. He calls it a desire. Bill Wilson called it an obsession. It's a thought. An obsession is defined as a thought or group of thought, like a conversation, that expels all reasonable, factual information. In other words, all we can think about is one thing. Medication, ease and comfort, relief, right? That comes in a split. I know what works, right? And I can't bring into my mind the memory of the suffering, the devastation, the annihilation of all things worthwhile, the complete destruction of my life, and all that I'm going to lose. The only thing that my mind can think about, and this makes us different from other people, is what it did for me. All I need is relief. I'll get over it somehow. I'll just fix it. I'll just do it today, and I won't do it tonight, and I'll do it tomorrow, or whatever that is, right? My sponsor said, Joe, you're just consulting with the idiot, right? One half selling, the other half buying. Sounds good to me. Nobody will know. That's the one I used to use a lot. Nobody will know. What about me? I'll know. And I begin to live the lie again, right? He says, once we give in to the desire again, as so many do, that means I'm drinking, and the craving develops, we go through the well-known stages of a spree or binge, emerging remorseful. Remorseful. Ugh, nauseating remorse. With a firm resolution, we'll sick them, will, not to drink again. It says this is repeated over and over. Unless this person experiences an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. You ever wonder why you couldn't recover? Maybe you haven't had that entire psychic change. There's many in here that have. But not the way they thought they needed to get it. See, that was my problem. I'll provide myself that psychic change. I'll just, you know what, I won't go where my triggers are. You know, I won't go into a 7-Eleven because they sell beer. You know, I won't go down that street because of so-and-so, or this and that and the other, right? That doesn't work. A broken mind can't heal a broken mind, right? It says, we believe and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy because we have an abnormal reaction to the beverage alcohol or the substance of whatever narcotic there is out there. And we have symptoms to that allergic reaction, right? He says the symptom is this physiological craving. This, he called it a phenomenon back then because he didn't have any clinical trial or proof to support it. But he saw what was happening with us. Makes perfect sense if you're a real alcoholic, right? To know that no matter what our desire, no matter what we stand to lose, when we put it in, we can't stop, right? That's the allergic reaction. There's physiological demand for more of the same substance, right? He said that it's limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. And there's a solution. They talk about that average temperate drinker. We all know them. They're the people that can drink a half a beer or half a glass of wine at dinner time and leave the rest. They can take it or leave it alone. They don't, you know, it doesn't dominate them, right? That allergic thing doesn't happen in them, right? They can begin to drink and get that slightly tipsy, out of control feeling, go, whoa, I don't want no more of that. That's alcohol abuse, right? Something wrong with that. You imagine a crack smoker smoking like a two hits of crack and say, no, I don't want no more of that. It don't happen. Doesn't happen. Right? But not with a temperate drinker. given sufficient reason, they can stop or moderate. Stop or moderate. Is that you? That's one of the questions you got to ask yourself. Is that you? And then they say there's a certain type of hard drinker. Now, this is a cat that looks just like a real alcoholic, right? Red face, red eyes, just kind of poor health, you know, just, you know, kind of, you know, that person that's just, you can see that they're going downhill, right? Health-wise and physical-wise and appearance-wise. And they drink and drink and drink. And you know what? They may get arrested. They may get DUIs. They may suffer major consequences. They may even need detox. But given sufficient reason, given an operative reason, like loss of family, loss of home, loss of career, loss of health, loss of freedom, they can also stop or moderate on their own. Is that you? But what about the real alcoholic? Well, we may start off as a moderate drinker. We may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of our drinking career or drugging career life, we begin to lose all control over our consumption once we begin. So at this juncture, you may have been a moderate to a hard drinker or drugger, but at this juncture, you lose the choice of whether you're going to do it or not. In other words, you can't wake up and say, well, I choose not to today. Matter of fact, I choose not to for a month and be able to do it. You can't stop. And the worst part about it is you can't stop starting, no matter what the necessity or wish, period. And you can't win out in single-handed combat when that obsession comes in, because you're medicating something that is unseen to the world, but only known by you on the inside. Right? It is what it is. Now, Dr. Silkworth even said, he said, one feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the entire psychic change, or the essential psychic change. He says, he classifies this, he talks about the psychopaths, not, you know, that psychopaths are people that continue to do something that's hurtful and can't stop doing it, right? He says those are the people that are emotionally unstable. We're all familiar with this type. They're always going on the wagon for keeps. I'll stop tomorrow. Oh, boy. I'll stop next week. I'll stop when this. Whatever, right? He says they're over-remorseful and make many resolutions, but never a decision. Then there's a type of concealer. Decision needs action, or it's not a decision. I don't care what you say you've decided to do. If you never took action to do it, it wasn't a decision. It was just a nice intention. It is what it is, right? Says then there's a guy that, or gal that's, you know, unwilling to admit that they can't take a drink. Plan various ways of drinking, changes brand or environment. Then there's a type who believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, that he can take a drink without danger. God, I don't know if there's anybody in here that buys into that garbage anymore. But and then there's a manic depressive type who is perhaps the least understood by his friends and about whom a whole chapter could be written. And I was talking with somebody earlier. If you're suffering from something other than alcohol or drug abuse, like mental depression, you need to see somebody in that field. You need to address that. There's nothing wrong with that. If you suffer from clinical depression or bipolar, you need to have it addressed. Period. Right? Says then there's the types that, just like all of us here sitting here tonight, the types entirely normal in every respect, except in the effect that alcohol has upon them. They're often able, intelligent, friendly people, just like all of us right here, right? Says all these and many others have one symptom in common, just one symptom, that we cannot start drinking or drugging without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, now which is a fact, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Well, how the hell do you do that? How do you do that? Most of us try. Most of us try to will that thing into existence where we'll just stop. That's what we tell our people. I'll just stop. I know it's driving you crazy, and I know they're going to take the children away, but I'll just stop. But after a while, they just won't believe us anymore because we can't stay stopped. It says, this immediately precedes us into a seething cauldron of debate. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, these are our medical professionals, right? These very smart, intellectual people that are medical professionals. The general opinion seems to be that most of us are doomed. Doomed. And you know what? We are. This is a fatal death sentence that we have. If you can't stop when you start, you can't stay stopped because of a mental obsession. That means we're going to die of this thing. We're going to die of active alcoholism or active drug addiction. Many of us have. Unless we seek a solution that has been proven effective. That's what this is. It says there is a solution. You know, it says there, what is a solution? It says, you know, well, let's go to it. I can tell you in a nutshell, the solution is something other than human power. Listen, if human power could do it, all of us would be doing it. Right? If mom could do it, if the judge could do it, if the jailer could do it, if the cops could do it, brothers, sisters, family members, children, if they could persuade us to stay stopped, all of us would be doing it. But even in their pleas and begging us to stop and stay stopped, please don't do it again, mommy. Please don't do it again, daddy. Listen, you do it again, you're going to prison for life. You do this again, you're going to lose this. You do this again. None of that kept us stopped. We always started again. Because this won out. This won out. This preceded the lie that we could tell ourselves, as maniacal as it is, it'll be different this time. Nobody will know. I'll just do it better. I'll manage it this time. I won't do that. I'll do this instead. Whatever that lie was that gave our, where we give ourselves permission to put it in, the poison that's killing us, in light of all the things we stand to lose, right? So, says this. Tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news. This book, hopefully it's discussed in the fellowship, but they're talking about what this book offers. The program is here. It says, this is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. With the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. This has consequences that we harbor inside. You truly have to be, I would have to say, you know, unthinking or brain dead to not suffer the remorse and shame and regret from the things that we do to other people. Right? You'd have to be very cold-blooded. Right? It says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution who is properly armed with the facts about himself can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. I didn't make any of this stuff up, people. The stuff I'm talking about, this internal condition, the inability to say stop, the inability to stop when I start, this comes from actual life experience. I have suffered these things. And if I would have gotten sober and they would have told me I would have had to continue to harbor those things on the inside, I'd have said, the hell with you, I'm drinking. Or give me a gun because I'm taking myself out. I can't live with that stuff going on the inside. Nobody can. Nobody. You can't walk around feeling like the all-time loser, certain that other people are looking at you like that, and live an effective life. You can't do it. You can't, right? It says, we feel that the elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. Just a beginning. Just a beginning. Now, this is what the book says. And I happen to believe it. It says, you may have already asked yourself why it is all of us become so very ill from drinking and doing whatever we do. Doubtless you're curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you're an alcoholic, or if you're a drug addict who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? There may be those of you in here that are asking that question, what do you have to do? Well, guess what? I can tell you what you don't have to do. Make up any of it. You have to figure it out. It's already been figured out. Not only has it been figured out, it's been written down. We're not real good at following directions. But when our lives are on the line, and the lives of our children are on the line, the lives of all of our loved ones are on the line, when our entire future is on the line, you may want to consider following directions. Right? It's the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. They don't mince words. They didn't say vaguely. They didn't say it might. They didn't say, it's the purpose of this book to try and answer these things. It says it's the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. Right? When you go into, if you ever jumped out of a plane, they recommend you pull that ripcord. What idiot would walk out of a plane at 30,000 feet and I'm just not going to pull that ripcord? I'm going to float to the bottom. I mean, whatever insanity could possibly happen, it's the same thing with us. If you're dying from the disease of alcoholism, if you can't stop when you start, and you can't stay stopped, this is the way out. This is a solution. It's not a human solution. We're going in a spiritual direction. The point is, we hear it every meeting, we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. Right? That's the point. So, it says, the problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. So, if we never put this stuff into our body, then we're never going to suffer the consequences of drinking actively. But they say there's other consequences, whether I'm drinking or not, that I can suffer from the dis-ease of alcoholism if left untreated, regardless of whether I'm drinking or not, that could be profoundly impactful in our lives, like, and take us down, right? Suffering from the disease of alcoholism if left untreated, or walking around with an alcoholic mind, is something I did for decades, and thought I was treating it. See, I didn't drink. Many times I stopped. Hundreds of times I stopped. Problem is, I couldn't stay stopped. No human power could relieve me of my alcoholism, aka keep me stopped. See, if I'm relieved of my alcoholism, I'm able to stay stopped. Got it? So I'm walking around. I'm not drinking. I'm not drugging. I'm dying from the inside out, pretending to everybody I'm good. I hope she likes me. Hope she smiles at me. You know, my mind was a one-track mind. Sick and suffering, right? So I would search out sick and suffering. Who else is going to be attracted to sick and suffering, right? Untreated alcoholism, an alcoholic mind, thinking I'm treating it by not drinking and going to meetings. I'm going to them damn meetings, and then I get drunk again, or I get high again. I come up with a little lie because I was dying on the inside. And once I started, I couldn't stop. It took me right back down to the gutter. There was a point where the only thing I could do was detox. I'd come in, I'd get into a halfway situation, and then I'd retox. Detox, retox. That was my MO. I had never recovered inside of those periods. I'd never followed this instruction manual. Right? Now, if I don't recover from the hopeless condition of my mind, which is the very thing that is concocting the lie, the obsessive lie, right? Based on my sense of dis-ease and discomfort on the inside, having me actually aggravate the allergy because the only way I know of ease and comfort is to put it in, right? I'm down for the count. When we get to the decision, because all this is leading to for me to make an effective decision, I'm gathering some information to really have me concede to my innermost self three pertinent ideas, right? We hear at every meeting that I am an alcoholic and can't manage my own life. My thinking is distorted. My perception is screwed up. My interpretation of things is really screwed up. You know, I'm living a lie. I'm dying inside. I don't know how to tell anybody. All this kind of mania is going on the inside. A, got it. I'm an alcoholic, can't manage my own life. B, that probably no human power could relieve me. I don't care what halfway I go to, what treatment center I go to, what detox I go to, what hospital I go to, what jail I go to. I don't care what human being I go to. They could help get me stopped. They couldn't keep me stopped. When that thing came in, and I was ready to get some ease and comfort, it was over. I certainly wouldn't tell you guys. I wouldn't go up and say, man, I think I'm going to go get high tonight. I think I'm going to destroy my life again and take everybody down with me. I didn't tell you guys that. That was all by myself. I didn't want to be interrupted. I was on a mission. I needed ease and comfort, right? So if no human power could relieve me of that condition, they say that God could and would if he were sought. Because they had done this. They came to that conclusion. They conceded to themselves those first two proposals. And they say, you know what? What do I got to lose? It was presented to me, Joe, how well is what you've been doing working for you? What have you been able to accomplish in the realm of recovery, intimate, authentic, empowering, trusting relationships with other people, successful career, consistency, health, beyond the pale? What have you accomplished with all your ability, talent, skills in those domains? I had nothing. Zero. I felt like a nobody. I hated my guts. And I was going nowhere real fast. I was going down. What did I have to lose? So how long am I going to continue this argument that I'm going to seek a spiritual solution? Nope, don't want to do that. Great, finish a job, Joe. Go out and get her done. Get it done. We're tired of you. How well has it been working for you, Joe? How could I argue anymore? What was I arguing for? The right to be right? The right to stay in control of what? Of a life in complete disrepair, complete annihilation. Why would I say, so they say, death, powerlessness, stay engaged in step number one, stay powerless, stay with all that, door number one. Let's make a deal, Joe. Door number two, live a life unimaginable, not one that you can imagine, one that's completely unimaginable, like from the caterpillar to the butterfly, like this profound alteration in your reaction to life. This just transformation that takes you to a place where you're living from a completely different understanding of life. Empowering, consistent, responsible, disciplined, committed. Or door number, oh, wait a minute. There is no door number three. There isn't. It says this in 12 and 12, step two. Please listen. We who had won so handsomely in a walk turned into all-time losers. We saw that we had to reconsider or die. Door number one, door number two. We found many in AA who once thought as we did. They helped us get down to our right size. By their example, they showed us that humility and intellect could be compatible, provided we placed humility first. When we began to do that, we received the gift of faith, a faith that works. This faith is for you too. See, it's not just for one of us. If it can happen to me, it can happen to anybody. Trust me. Y'all know where I came from. That wonderful avenue down there called Broward. That was me. The troll with the public bag. That was me. When I get sent out of the Salvation Army at 6 a.m. in the morning, I'd aimlessly wander nowhere. Says this. Alcohol had become the great persuader. Says it finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. I hope and pray that every single person in this room, if you're new, is at that place where you have been beaten into the state of being teachable. See, if you're reasonable, that would absolutely hold that you're teachable. If you're unreasonable, you're thinking that the knowledge that you have will get you where you want to go. Like I've been getting X all my life. I've been getting this culmination. My past is nothing more than a snapshot of my thinking. All the evidence that I have is a result of my thinking. Nothing happens until I think about it. I have an emotion or a feeling about it. I take an action. I get a result. So I got all these results right here, and they can be considered X. And I get here, and it's like, I don't want no more X. You know what I mean? I want something other than X. I'd like to have that Y result. Empowerment, intimate relationships, authentic, committed, consistent, successful. I'd like to have that. I don't want that anymore. Well, you will not get this from this. If you want something different, you have to do something different. And in order to do something different, you have to think something different. That's what this program does. See, when we make the decision to seek the solution, it says it's come to all who have earnestly sought, sincerely, earnestly, right? You can't take a casual approach to this. Not if you truly know that your life is on the line and the lives of all your family, the people that love you, right? it's so much easier than trying to figure it out. Can you imagine trying to get why from this? From the thinking that we walked in here with? The three things that really will keep us in the place that we're at is this insistence on wanting to be right, wanting to look good, and wanting to be in control. You know what surrender means? It means giving up to join the winning side. Not giving up to be labeled a loser. It means giving up to join the winning side. This is the winning side. This thing works. That's the hope of step two. Right? Next week we'll talk about three.
Let's thank the speaker one more time. And here's Heather for the secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary.
Yeah, Heather.
In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Jeremy to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone needing a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Please stand up. Sorry. Let's get these folks back to God. We have some events coming up. Specifically, the main one that's so important here is the Fellowship of the Spirit. It's going to be June 22nd and 23rd by Mickey and Marie. They're going to be flying in from Denver, Colorado, and we are starting it. It's going to be at this church. You can log online and get tickets on there for $35. You can also get tickets from some of the members. Mike Chase has them in the back. If you buy them online, there's an additional fee. We have some other events coming up. The Jersey Shore Roundup. We have the Waves of Serenity. We have the Joe and Charlie. It's going to be Mother's Day weekend. And we're actually planning a non-AA women's conference that is going to be in August. So there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of service opportunities. The state convention is going to be here. So get involved. If you want recovery, go and get it. It's here and available. Please join us Monday nights. Big Book Study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. The Big Book Study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the little red book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back. We meet here every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15 p.m., and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
We have tonight's session and all the speaker podcasts online at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book Study. And I'm just going to do a little side comment. I'm really glad everybody showed up tonight. And join us. We have our Monday night Big Book Study. It's on in the same building on the third floor. Instead of walking in to the right to this meeting, you'd go to the left up the stairs. And those who wish to thank the speaker, please line up down the center aisle. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer. God. Oh, I look, our Father. Godspeed. Yeah.
Thank you. this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine.